And now, Robert Trout with the news, direct from the NBC Newsroom in New York, presented by Pillsbury. If you have a man you want to please, serve him homemade apple pie and cheese. Apple pie with crust so tender it cuts at the touch of a fork. Light, flaky crust made with Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix. It's so easy, so quick when you use Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix. And you're sure of perfect results every time, even if you've never baked before. Remember, there are 9 full ounces in every package, ample for a big two-crust pie. So get a package of Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix, America's largest-selling pie crust mix, and serve your own homemade apple pie and cheese soon. Now, Bob Trout with the latest news. War, violence, and death stalked Palestine through 1948, and in the first week of 1949, it's growing worse. Ralph Bunche, the American who's been acting as U.N. mediator for the Holy Land ever since Count Bernadotte was murdered there, left New York for the Mediterranean island of Rhodes a few hours ago. There, on Rhodes, he hopes to work out an armistice that will end the war between Jew and Arab. But before he departed, Dr. Bunche had to order an investigation into the latest trouble, the shooting down by the Jews of 5 Royal Air Force planes stationed in Egypt. The Jews do not permit United Nations observers to watch their military operations in the Negev Desert and the Egyptian border, and so no one seems to know just how the UN is going to investigate. In answer to the shooting down of the RAF planes, Great Britain is sending stronger forces to the Middle East, including an aircraft carrier and a cruiser that have been in different parts of the Mediterranean. But Britain denies that rumor that the British Consul General in Haifa has advised all British subjects to leave Palestine. That one is not true. Transjordan announces British troops have arrived at the port of Aqaba in answer to a Transjordan invitation. The Israelis are protesting this, and according to one story, Soviet Russia is now offering to support the Jews in any trouble that may come. A clash that would bring Russia into the Mediterranean has for generations been a nightmare to the Western powers. 1949 is not off to a good start in the Middle East. Whatever difficulties this year may bring to the Soviet Union, the Russians should be able to overcome them with new inventions. According to the Soviet Academy of Sciences in Leningrad today, the Russians are very good at inventing things. They invented the airplane long before the Wright brothers took to the air. They also invented propellers for ships, insulated wire, electric transformers, radio, electric lights, penicillin, parachutes, jet propulsion, etc. You name it, they invented it. Pravda, the Communist Party newspaper in Moscow, doesn't like President Truman's address to Congress last week, says it's a smokescreen. There'll be no improvements in social welfare in the United States. But the Democratic leaders of Congress in Washington think that most of Mr. Truman's program will become law, all right. Senator Scott Lucas of Illinois, who will be the new majority leader on the Democratic side, says he's busy with the new labor law to replace Taft-Hartley. Senator Lucas wants a bill that will wrap up all the labor legislation in one package and can be passed by the 1st of May, the date on which many labor contracts come to an end. Tomorrow, the Senate Republicans get together to arrange their committee assignments in the new Senate, and the Republicans may also decide then whether they're going to make a fight against Dean Acheson when his name comes up in the Senate for confirmation as the new Secretary of State. What will happen to America's relations with China with the new Secretary of State, no one can be sure. The story today in Nanking is that China's staggering government has now asked Soviet Russia to take part in that attempt to stop the terrible Chinese Civil War. And now for Pillsbury, here is Arthur Gary.
Thank you, Bob Trout. You have everything an apple pie ought to when you use Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix to bake your homemade apple pie. Yes, all the dry ingredients you need to make light, tender, flaky pie crust are scientifically measured and blended for you. You just add water to Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix and roll out your pie dough. It's that quick, that easy. So serve apple pie topped with a tasty slice of cheese. Get several packages of Pillsbury Pie Crust Mix soon. Listen again next Sunday at this time for Robert Trout with the News, brought to you by Pillsbury, greatest name in flour. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
WMAQ and WMAQ-FM, NBC in Chicago. Here is your early evening lineup for fine entertainment. Listen to the Ozzie and Harriet Show at 5:30. At 6 o'clock, it's time for Horace Heights' popular Youth Opportunity Program. And remember to listen for Phil Harris and Alice Faye at 6:30. Keep tuned to this station for your favorite Sunday shows.
Mr. Smith?
Yes?
Mr. Charles Xavier Smith?
That's right.
This is for you.
A subpoena.
By authority of the House of Representatives of the Congress of the United States of America, you are directed to appear before the Un-American Activities Committee in their chamber in the city of Washington and not to depart without leave of said committee. Herein fail not.
Living 1949. Brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations. Today taking its cue from Congress, serves you with a subpoena to listen as it holds up its radio mirror to reflect the facts surrounding a legislative tool of our government. In a drama document entitled
An Investigation into Congressional Investigation.
Here is your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. These are times in which it specially behooves the individual citizen to occupy himself with a healthy curiosity about his Congress. For his Congress, he may be sure, may at any time exhibit a searching curiosity about him, about some of his activities, business, professional, or political. Yes, the 81st Congress, surprised to some for its Democratic majority, will be a surprise to no one for the rate at which it will sprout that hardy perennial, the Investigating Committee. As for the man in the street, your neighbor next door, what's he saying?
Those committees are a darn good thing.
What? Look, they're just a waste of the taxpayers' money.
Opinions? Yes, opinions. And differing not at all in 1949 from opinions on the same subject in 1860, when...
I know it is said this power is necessary. Convenient it may be, but necessary, never.
That was Senator Sumner back in the days of Lincoln. Now here is Senator Nye in the midst of the stormy 30s.
Out of practically every investigation, there comes legislation improving the security of the government and the people.
And Walter Lippmann on the investigations of the 20s.
That legalized atrocity, the congressional investigation, where congressmen go on a wild and feverish manhunt and do not stop at cannibalism.
But whether they are a legalized atrocity or a boon to the nation, the fact remains that congressional investigations are a subject that we dare not overlook if we are truly to reflect the world in which we live. What we propose to do, then, is to raise certain questions, adduce some authority and evidence, stimulate your own civic impulse further to investigate investigations, and then, in the spirit of free men, make up your mind. The questions seem pretty much to boil down to these.
Where'd they come from, anyway? Are congressional investigations a new thing?
I want to know, are they legal?
Do we need them at all? What purposes are they supposed to serve?
What do those who attack them have to say?
And what's said in their defense?
Should or shouldn't they be overhauled?
Question one. Where'd they come from?
The principle of legislative inquiry came to America with the Mayflower. It's almost 400 years old. And so for our beginnings, we must carry you all the way back to the London of Elizabeth at the end of the 16th century. To the Sheriff of London on the stand before Parliament.
I charge you once again, Cherry Backton, in the name of Her Majesty's Lords and Commons, to give us the facts.
Will you leave me, Lord? To my thinking, this is no proper matter for this body, and in no wise the Parliament's concerned.
Sheriff Backton... It is our will that for thus, by your silence, holding in contempt these, Her Gracious Majesty's Lords and Commons, your person shall be confined within the Tower of London until you repent ye this defiance.
So we see that the young Congress of the United States had solid English precedent behind it when in 1792 it passed a resolution.
Resolved that a committee be appointed to inquire into the causes of the failure of the late expedition under Major General St. Clair, and the said committee be empowered to call such persons, papers, and records as may be necessary.
What Congress wanted to find out in this first congressional investigation was why Major General St. Clair, marching into the Northwest Territory to quell rebellious Indians, met up with a military disaster.
593 men killed or missing. Now, General, this is what the committee wants to know. How could this happen?
I have untrained troops, Mr. Congressman. I have nothing to lay to the charge of these new recruits, but their want of discipline. It was impossible that they should not have been confused at the first sight of the Indians. I myself had four horses shot from under me.
General St. Clair was cleared, but Congress staked out for itself a new area of power, the power to investigate. This claim was not to go unchallenged.
I shall, on the one hand, cause every possible facility consistent with law and justice to be given Congress. But by the eternal...
This, you must have guessed, is Old Hickory, General Andrew Jackson, a generation later, who started hating Congress when they started investigating him back in the Seminole War days, and who is now, as president, storming because they propose to investigate his integrity and efficiency.
But by the eternal, I shall, on the other hand, repudiate all attempts to invade the just rights of the executive department and the individuals comprising the same.
In the end, Congress had to give up the investigation because...
we just couldn't find enough material.
Threescore years later, in the investigation of President James Buchanan, lack of material was no problem. The idea...
To discover whether the President of the United States or any other officer of the government has, by money, patronage, or other and improper means, sought to influence the action of Congress.
Report of the committee.
The President is guilty of an attempt to convert Kansas into a slave state by means of forgeries, fraud, and force.
The wonder is, after this fiery report, that Buchanan was not impeached. It is said, however, the investigation contributed vastly to one result.
Let's have an honest man for a change. Vote for Abe. Honest Abe. Honest Abe Lincoln.
Yes, Buchanan's record, aired by the investigations of 1858, proved to be a great vote-getter for the man who came to the White House in 1860. So we can see why it is that someone said...
The history of our country is written in the records of congressional investigations.
The box score of that history...
More than 500 investigations in 156 years. Investigations of everything from plots to overthrow the government to...
We plan to investigate the damage done to the citrus groves by the Mediterranean fruit fly.
Think back, America, into recent history alone. Recall investigators like...
Nye, Pecora, Dyes, Truman.
Investigate further and you'll find among those investigators...
Washington, Burr, Jackson, Buchanan, Johnson, Grant, Blaine, Taft, Wilson, Harding, Hoover, FDR.
Some men like this one...
Blaine, James G. Blaine, the continental liar from the state of Maine.
Men like Blaine have been ruined because of congressional investigation. Others...
I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States.
Other men have been helped into high office, even the presidency, by congressional investigation. Now that we know where they came from, what was question number two?
I want to know, are they legal?
I'll answer that, Mr. Grauer.
Oh, sold.
Who's this guy?
I'm a lawyer.
Oh. Okay, Mr. Lawyer. Make with the law.
There is no specific clause in the Constitution that says Congress can carry on investigations.
I thought so. That's what I told.
But it's an implied right. Implied not only through usage, but in several clauses of the Constitution.
Name me, for instance.
For instance, Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution says, in effect, look, Congress, you have all the power to make the laws.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with investigations?
Well, if Congress has the power to make laws, surely it must have the information it needs to make them wisely. And isn't it implied that it has the right to investigate to get that information?
Now, what's the Supreme Court got to say about this?
The Supreme Court, on the whole, has held that Congress has the right to investigate to get information.
But supposing I refuse? I mean, supposing somebody refuses to give that information?
Refusal to testify before a congressional investigating committee has been made illegal by several statutes. To wit, U.S. Code Title 2, Section 9-2, Amendment 5-2, Statutes 9-4-2, July 13th, 1938. State.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
It's clear, then, they are legal. Now, question three.
What purposes do congressional investigations serve?
Most obvious purpose, to gather information to guide Congress in its job of lawmaking. Perfect example of a committee with such a purpose,
the PCORA Committee of the early 30s.
Many of you recall well the backdrop for these hearings. All summed up on the day the weekly publication Variety ran a celebrated headline.
Wall Street lays an egg.
Yes, the stock market crashed. In Washington, the national tension seemed to hang distilled in a single committee room as one little man took the witness chair before the PCORA committee.
I'm now 40 years of age. Tubercular, almost totally deaf. My wife and family are depending on me solely, and because of my abiding faith in my banker's advice, I'm today a pauper.
What did you do when even bonds began to fall?
I complained and was told, well, this is your own fault for insisting upon bonds. Why don't you buy some stocks? Well, the stock market had continually been moving up, so then I took it, hook, line, and sinker, and said, very well, buy stocks.
Did you tell your banker what stocks to buy?
Oh, no, never.
Well, did he buy stocks for your account?
Might I answer that facetiously? Did he buy stocks?
That was a little man. The big man, the mystery man of Wall Street, also came under the full spotlight of the committee.
Otto Kahn.
I think, Senator, that in 1929, there was a general brainstorm. Let him who is without sin cast the first stone.
Another witness.
It is hard to answer why we did things. It is even harder to say why we didn't.
Still another witness.
I tried to get as much stock as I could under control. The more I could get under control, the better.
The better for whom?
The better for me.
What did this investigation accomplish? It uncovered information on banking and trading practices that led to...
Four important pieces of legislation, including the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, which set up the SEC with far-reaching powers of regulation over the stock exchange.
But more unexpected was this happy result.
After all, there's still the children to think of, John, and you never know who they'll investigate next. Don't you think you ought to send in that $20 you didn't pay on your income tax?
In short... We of the Treasury Department were surprised when we were suddenly swamped with millions of dollars of back income taxes voluntarily paid by persons who were frightened by the committee proceedings. Since the committee's 17-month investigation cost only $182,000, Uncle Sam came out of that one with a walloping profit. Another purpose of investigation.
To supervise and keep tabs on the operation of the executive. That is, the president or his appointees.
Perhaps a good example of this is the scorcher of the early 20s known as the Teapot Dome scandal, concerned with the selfish exploitation of our nation's oil reserves. It touched the lives of...
The Secretary of the Interior, the heads of two large oil companies, and President Harding, who died shortly before the hearings began.
At first, the public was apathetic, for, as many put it...
You can't put $1 million in jail.
But the committee was willing to try. Harry F. Sinclair, Oklahoma oil millionaire, was put on the stand.
Sir, I do not decline to answer any question upon the ground that my answer may tend to incriminate me, because there is nothing in any of the facts or circumstances which does or can incriminate me. You've already sat in judgment on these questions and remitted them to courts of proper jurisdiction. Now, I shall reserve any evidence I may be able to give for those courts.
Well, since you were last on this stand, Mr. Sinclair, we have had before us a copy of this contract. Will you tell us about it?
I decline to answer on advice of counsel on the same ground.
Since you were on the stand last, Mr. John C. Schaefer told us about an agreement between yourself and Secretary Fall... under which Mr. Secretary was to receive from you a certain portion on the territory covered by the lease which you secured. Will you tell us about this matter?
I decline to answer on advice of counsel on the same ground.
Mr. Sinclair, now I believe in an earlier hearing, you testified in answer to a question that you had in no way, and none of your companies had, in any way... given or loaned anything to Secretary Fall. Now, is that correct?
I decline to answer on advice of counsel on the same ground.
But the general belief that the government had not the slightest chance to cancel the Teapot Dome lease and bring the wrongdoers to justice bit the dust. Valuable lands and oils were returned to the federal government, along with over $1 billion in back taxes. But not the least important result was proof that for contempt of Congress...
Say, you can jail $1 million at that.
Still another purpose of congressional investigations...
to mold public opinion.
And that gives us three purposes, then. To aid legislation, to check on the executive branch, and to mold public opinion. In recent years, at least one committee seemed to combine all three, and surprisingly enough, seemed to meet with almost everyone's approval. The three-in-one committee with this amazing record...
the Special Committee to Investigate the National Defense Program.
Chairman...
Senator Harry S. Truman.
An assignment described by some writers as...
the job that made Truman president.
It was the first committee to investigate war expenditures during the period of the war, when it was not too late to do something about it. The facts turned up by its persistent probing was something to win the confidence of the whole nation. One, for example, the confidence of...
I'm a carpenter working on a defense housing project. I'm writing to you to tell you that the houses are ripping at the seams. I know. I'm working on them.
Said Senator Truman.
We investigated defense housing and saved Uncle Sam $4.5 billion.
An employee of a large steel company tipped...
our steel inspections are a fake, and they're shipping the stuff to the U.S. Navy and Maritime Commission.
We investigated and helped send the guilty to their just deserts.
Senator Truman had merely to look in the direction of exorbitant shipyard profits.
After the committee had indicated its intention to investigate, a number of companies requested the Navy to reduce the payments made to them. This ridiculous situation should never have been permitted in the first place.
Said the Undersecretary of War, Patterson.
Their recommendations were often irritating, but invariably constructive. Some of the very best features of our war programs had their origin from the investigations made by this committee.
If every committee operated like the Truman Committee, then there'd be no need for our next question, namely...
what, if anything, is wrong with congressional investigating committees?
These are the charges commonly leveled against the investigative power of Congress.
There's too much duplication. The committees are falling all over each other's spyglasses.
True or false? Listen.
Let me cite straight from the record of a congressional hearing an appalling example of how not one, but 12 committees duplicate one another's work.
That's Congressman Estes Kefauver speaking out in American Magazine.
In a recent report of the House Committee on Interstate and Foreign Commerce, which is investigating the petroleum situation, the names of all the other committees investigating the petroleum are listed. These include the House Committees on Armed Forces, Merchant Marine and Fisheries, Public Lands, Banking and Currency, Expenditures and Executive Departments, and the Select Committee on Foreign Aid, and the Senate Committees on Interstate and Foreign Commerce, Banking and Currency, Public Lands, and the Special Committees on Small Business and Investigation of National Defense.
Another charge made against congressional investigations before the bar of public opinion...
somebody ought to tell those committees that we're citizens and that we've got rights.
This whole question was recently aired by witnesses before the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Here is NBC's actual recording of one such instance.
Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Communist Party of the United States?
In framing my answer to that question, I must emphasize the points that I have raised before. The question of communism is in no way related to this inquiry, which is an attempt to get control of the screen and to invade the basic rights of American citizens in all fields. The question here relates not only to the question of my membership in any political organization, but this committee is attempting to establish the right which is historically denied to any committee of this sort to invade the rights and privileges and immunities of American citizens, whether they be Protestant or Methodist or Jewish or Catholic, whether they be Republicans or Democrats or anything else.
Now, just quiet down again,
please. Does a congressional committee, because it does not allow cross-examination or representation by counsel, violate the spirit, if not the letter, of the Bill of Rights? Still another criticism of congressional committees.
Ah, they're just a circus. They ought to be ashamed of the way they carry on.
And in truth, sometimes the shenanigans of investigators and investigated both seem to warrant such criticism. Of late, Klieg lights, movie stars, newsreels, radio, and television have taken over the committee room. One of the most circus-like of all was this sideshow from the past.
A Senate chamber where the Pecora Committee is about to convene.
The performers...
J.P. Morgan, to
to whom publicity was anathema, entering the ring to testify.
As he seats himself, a press agent to whom publicity was not anathema plunks a midget, yes, a real, honest-to-goodness midget, upon the famous financier's lap. Excited, the photographers rush forward with cameras clicking and flashbulbs bursting as the following conversation ensues between Morgan and the midget.
I've got a grandson bigger than you.
But I'm older.
How old are you?
I'm only 20.
You don't look it. Where do you live, little girl?
In a tent, sir.
Well, you have a very pretty hat.
And also to the list of common criticisms.
They're biased. They only want to prove what they want to prove. Doesn't matter if they're right.
That sometimes congressional committees seem to have single-track minds is beautifully demonstrated by this scene, drawn from the records of the Dyes Committee, Seeing Red. The Federal Theater Project was under discussion, as the witness said...
I am quoting from Christopher Marlowe.
You are quoting from Christopher Marlowe. Yeah, who is he, a communist?
Christopher Marlowe.
Tell us who Marlowe is so we can get the proper reference.
Put in the record that he was the greatest dramatist in the period immediately preceding Shakespeare.
And final criticism for today...
It's our politics. They're just after their name in the papers, especially around election time.
Alf Landon, himself an investigation target during his presidential campaign, let go with both barrels.
No legal hair splitting can hide the difference between an investigating committee that is out to get the crooks and one that is out to get the critics.
And the voice of Mr. Landon is not the only one that has been raised in irritation at more than one congressional committee. But does this mean that they should all be junked? President Woodrow Wilson had this to say.
A representative government is meant to be the eyes and voice and will of its constituents. Unless Congress have and use every means of acquainting itself with the acts and disposition of the agents of government, the country must be helpless to learn how it is being served. The informing function of Congress should be preferred even to its legislative function.
If you hold with Woodrow Wilson, then, congressional committees often are and can continue to be a useful tool of democracy. The question seems to boil down to this.
What can we do to improve them?
One qualified observer, Robert K. Carr, professor of law and political science, tells us in the New York Times,
we should use substitute agencies like the Hoover Commission whenever possible. Congress should amend their rules so as to curb some of the more erratic and extreme practices. Perhaps a code of fair procedures to govern the conduct of all such committees, such as a restrained use of search warrants and of contempt power, forbid testimony in secret sessions and the release of statements and publication of documents which do not carry the approval of the committee majority.
Well, citizens, what about it? In the last analysis, it is up to you. In 2 weeks, we face a new administration. Under a man who himself led one of the most successful investigations in congressional history. It is therefore both interesting and pertinent to hear the opinion of Harry S. Truman.
In my opinion, the power of investigation is one of the most important powers of Congress. The manner in which that power is exercised will largely determine the position and prestige of the Congress in the future.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the scripts, and music is conducted by Milton Kadams. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to our drama document entitled
Inside Inauguration.
Your Wonderful Sunday on NBC has everything, including Ozzie and Harriet. Yes, the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet provide plenty of warm, very human comedy. What happens to Ozzie and Harriet might happen to you, but it's not likely to be as funny. Be sure to hear the adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, a great feature of Your Wonderful Sunday on most of these NBC stations. Robert Warren speaking.
This is NBC. Hear Horace Hite today.